This is Natasha Fisher with Talk to the Hand, and I'm here with Violet Trooper, a.k.a. Kristen Sidorak. You have your dogs with you, Charlie Brown and Serafina, yeah. And they have booped the Talk to the Hand microphone excessively. I'm going to have to hygiene the heck out of this when I get home. But we're here today to talk about your new release of your third album that came out on May 29th called On It, and listening through that, I have to say, it's absolutely blooming fantastic. Aww. How do you feel about getting it done and starting to promote it?
First of all, that's an amazing compliment. I appreciate that. I think a lot of artists and writers can relate. Once you've done something, you kind of want to move on to the next thing. Like, we've already been on such a journey where it's just hitting ears right now for us. It's like, I'm curious about what the next album is really going to be and what that sound will really get refined into. So I'm thinking ahead already and eager to start focusing on new stuff, though I'm stoked about how this came out as well.
I listened through a number of your albums, because you've done quite a few now. And, you know, 13 years ago, there was quite a different vibe of your style, mm-hmm. of the music that you were playing. Can you speak to the evolution that you've gone through to get to this point with On It?
I was pretty young, balancing working full-time in New York. And to be honest, I have to admit, the way I had written and initially envisioned the songs, they shifted across the production process quite a bit. Those songs were initially very much just like bedroom, like kind of grungy, simple. Then I happened to link up with my collaborator, Roger, who became part of the band. And truth be told, it just started to expand. So the sound is very produced, it's very big. And then it did take on this sort of spaghetti western twinge and sort of dreamy kind of poppy vibe here and there. So, which I appreciated, because it's almost in looking back at the way all of them are very different and how I approach them with how I collaborated in the end production. I'm really glad that I allowed like this like freedom of everyone who collaborated to take part in that. When I got to Portland, someone who I had met had said, you know, your voice and where I feel like you're going as an artist would lend itself well to tuned percussion. And I didn't even really know what he meant by that. Of course, I was aware of tuned percussive instruments, but as a main instrument and as a songwriter, it hadn't crossed my mind. But I got very curious and I immediately jumped on it. The idea of it, and started listening to some things and where can I rent or buy one? And they are obviously a more pricey instrument. So I tracked one down initially on Craigslist. It was amazing. We fell in love. And I essentially wrote an album in less than a month, which was Navigate. But I realized I can't record on this. It'll make too much, you know, residual sound. So I was like zeroing in on how can I find a better set, like the wood frame, you know. And I happened to stumble into Apple Music on a work break. I was working a contract near there by the bridge. And by chance, they had a Mooser vibraphone, exactly what I knew to envision from the 50s, wood, solid frame, silver bars, just gorgeous. And this story is worth it, I swear.
I mean, there's synchronicity in that, right?
Yes, exactly, because I felt like I was in a conundrum. I was still new to the world of percussion and all of that. And I went up to the store clerk pretty excited, even though with the tag on it, I knew like I wasn't going to pick those up and roll them home anytime soon. But I was curious. I wanted to play them. And he was a little apprehensive about just passing me some mallets. And so I just thought that was a little funny. And there was a guy on the other side of the counter standing on my side. And he just, you know, nodded. And so I wait for him in the back by the vibraphones. And he, you know, hands them to me and kind of stands and I'm banging away. And I'm like, these are absolutely beautiful. This is amazing. Crazy you have these, you know. And he's like, yeah. Well, curious, do you know who that person is over there? I was like, no, you know. And the guy who was on my side of the counter, he's like, that's Ben Shepherd. And I was like, okay, Ben Shepherd. I don't know. And he's like, oh, he's from Soundgarden. I was like, oh, rad. That's cool. Of course I know Soundgarden. I grew up with them. But I didn't place who he was in person. And he goes, well, he's actually here from Seattle to pick these vibraphones up. And I'm like, Oh, got it. That's why things are a little awkward right now. And I immediately look over to Ben across the room, and he comes towards me, you know, and I'm like, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to make this uncomfortable for you. This is sick that you found these two. And he had a studio mate, like, there with a U-Haul out front that I had walked by to bring them back. And he was just so gracious and, you know, asked me about what I'd been up to with the instrument. And I told him about the trip to Joshua Tree and the situation with recording and needing a better set. And, like, by no means was I prepared to try to invest in these, but this isn't, his wheels were turning, you know, like, as I'm saying this, I felt almost uncomfortable, but it's like, he asked, you know, and this is the situation. He goes, listen. And, you know, this was years, you know, before Chris passed away. They had just gotten home from a tour with Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. And he lives on Bainbridge. And he mentioned he had a lot of housework he had to get back to after being away for so long. And he's like, you know, how about you just borrow these for a little bit while you get that album recorded, and you let me know when you're done.
Oh.
And I just, my mouth was already open. Wow. And it just dropped because it was just the way it had all started to unfold. And I, yeah, and he looks to, you know, the guy at the store who's also I'm connected with as well. And he said, you open to getting these to her apartment? And I was living over by Laurelhurst at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I was just in shock. So yes, serendipity, completely. Wow. It was just, I had to realize between all the ways I got introduced to the instrument and then all of this facilitated and how quickly I wrote on them, they like we were a match.
Yeah.
I just believed in it and I trusted in that. And then long story short, we kept in touch. He ended up coming down once the album was done, listened to the, not final masters, but the you know, tracking of it, mm-hmm. took me out to dinner at one of my friend's restaurants in town with one of his friends who came down to help. And he brought him back up to Seattle, and that was that.
Wow.
And the album was done, and the funny thing, and you'll go see these vibraphones in the garage in a moment, but I was then, like, on this massive high and then an immediate low of, like, I don't have my instrument anymore. like, this beautiful vibraphone set, like, so I went on Craigslist again. I'll cut this a little shorter. But literally within the 12 hours of Ben picking them up, someone in Tacoma, Washington listed the exact type of vibes I had borrowed from him, but with gold bars instead of silver.
In the limelight, searching, but it's real tight, come to find. In the limelight, searching, but it's real tight, come to find.
To finally now get back to your original question, because there was, like, between The Good Fight, then Navigate, and On It, mm-hmm. I very, especially with a conceptual album, you have to be very intentional. It gives you a lot of creative space, more than you realize, almost more when you put those parameters around. From a sound perspective, as I moved on, that also was very intentional of, okay, look at my track record, you know, this guitar, some keys, singer-songwriter thing that took shape in big ways with maybe 10 people involved. Mm-hmm. With Navigate, it was just my friend John Mooney and I did that intentionally. First of all, I just admired him as a musician, and he was here in town. We had a similar friend group, and it just came together really easily. And between the two of us, I just was much more confident with my production process, my ability to communicate vision, and also his multi-talented take and perspective and just execution on it all. So over 10 days, we recorded that album.
Wow.
And so then going to On It, from a sound perspective, I was like, I kind of want to bridge and almost create, not a hybrid, like an exact hybrid of what the first and second were, but I want to bring in the elements again. I miss guitar, you know. I focused on bringing this grunge kind of Western approach to the guitar with the vibraphone. Mm-hmm. With On It, you know, this one spanned over 6 years, and those songs were not made for each other per se, but then over time, as I got to the finish line with them, it made complete sense why those 10 tracks are on It, mm-hmm. from both a thematic and a sonic perspective. And so that's how that took shape, that evolution and mixing this very dreamy, ethereal approach and meditative approach to how I wrote with the vibraphones initially to create a little more structure and attack here and there, and then bridge that with the kind of like moody cinematic feel that I bring to the guitar.
I really appreciate that you touched on the cinematic because it was a couple of things that I really got from a couple of songs. There's moments where I was thinking about the Wim Wenders film, Paris, Texas. Thinking about kind of, my partner said, that's got a sort of Tom Waits kind of Nine Inch Nails vibe to it.
Oh,
it's, I really felt like, and I want to come back to this as a question, but I really felt like I was maybe watching a very gritty opening title sequence to a TV show or a film. One question I do have, I do like to bring it back to sort of practical questions.
Okay.
So what is your earliest music memory?
Honestly, it's probably my dad playing his beautiful Steinway grand piano. He was an amazing pianist, or is an amazing pianist, and he was very serious about that as a path. And then, and his parents, at a certain point, had taken it so seriously that in time gifted him that piano, and we were fortunate enough to grow up with it. And also, my mom was very musical, and she was also in theater. And they were friends with John Denver growing up. They were very close. My dad did a concert with him, Evening for Peace, crazy stuff. So she played guitar during the children's sermons and, you know, was in a swing band and sang in for a swing band. So yeah, it was all around, not to mention then all of the other, you know, well-known musicians that they brought my way, and then my sister in time, more obscure musicians or very influential ones to me.
Wow, so you really have that bedrock of a musical backdrop. So me asking you about your earliest musical memory is, it was interwoven in your very soul, probably.
Certainly. Oh, the heart of my parents, they're very passionate. My dad's Russian, my mom's Italian. They're fiery, intense people, you know.
Do you still go to church and engage in choral and choir singing at all?
I don't. I don't engage in terms of the choir and singing because I'll go to church here and there, but different denominations. In LA, when I was there for a time, I did go to the Hollywood Methodist Church, which there were people still with affiliation to my parents, and so that was easy. It was close enough.
Yeah.
But I have never really been living somewhere long enough where I settled into a congregation or felt inclined to. Mm-hmm. What was nice about, though, my parents ended up being pastors and I grew up in my mom's church, they were very open as they were leaving the ministry in terms of career or retiring. They were really, really open and accepting to how we wanted to continue our lives. We, you know, didn't have an expectation that we would go to a church, let alone a Methodist church. At the end of the day, my mom, it was very pivotal as she was leaving the church, saying, "Kristen, I don't care if you, you know, go to church every Sunday or an active part or not, or you don't step foot in a church again. I just hope that you have a spiritual mind and practice and an awareness and love. And whether you're sitting up on a mountain, you know, at the ocean, at a river, wherever you are, like that, you take those moments and you connect with God."
I really appreciate that you talk about your parents being so thoughtful with that it wasn't a domination and a suppression. It was about engaging your soul and your heart rather than suppressing you with indoctrination.
So well said. It well reflected, exactly. And let me just say, I am very, very grateful. And I'm aware that that's not the case for a lot of people. And very close friends of mine who it's been a lifelong journey to unpack a lot of that. And we all have our own things to unpack, plenty of my own. But that I was very fortunate in that realm of being exposed and building a faith, but not feeling as if I was had a certain confinement around it. Mm. And nor did I need to proselytize, you know.
I think I'm going to say amen to that, sister.
Amen, sister. Yes, that's a perfect segue out of this conversation. Amen.
You know, one of the things that I talked to Lizzie Rose about was, you know, reconnecting with songs that had been written a number of years previous where your mindset isn't quite the same.
Yeah.
Did you have to reshape them a little bit, or did they still resonate in the same way?
Yeah, it's actually both. Mm. And I appreciate that question. That will allow me to bring in Jens and Steve to this. So Nathan and I had tracked all of the vibraphone engineering was done in 2019. 2020 was essentially when it disbanded because of COVID, mm-hmm. and a lot had happened leading up to then and then afterward. And a lot of the bass, guitar parts, honestly, most of it was engineered except for vocals and essentially that accessory shell and cohesiveness to pull it all together from a production standpoint, really defining the sound through that other production. So that was what was missing. And so I'll tell you, though I had those in a file that I knew I could access, even if it took me a little headache to figure out where they are and getting them up, I put off listening to them because of how much was going on in my life at the time, but also because I was worried that I'd be potentially disconnected from them. Mm. And how would I feel, and would I still get the motivation to keep going with them? Am I going to have to start from scratch? Yeah, so that relationship to them was this big mystery that I allowed be a mystery for a while. And then finally there was enough impetus in me. Like, I was grieving my mother passing, but maybe at the 6 to 9 month mark, I pulled up the tracks, and I remember putting just my head down on the table like, I can't believe this. I'm in love with these songs. I couldn't quite grasp just how much we had done and that they still very much resonated.
Wow.
And Steve is someone I met in 2016, ironically, when I had started writing all those songs, because I went to a music workshop of his at UC Boulder. So flash forward, I realized now I'm in LA. I saw that Steve was out there and I sent him an email. Within 24 hours, we were on a call talking about where this project was, where this album was, and what it needed to get to the finish line. And when I look back over the 6 months we worked very intensively together, it was serendipitous that he had that time, because he was negotiating going on tour with other bands in the tech crew. He's with Blood Orange and he's done other, collaborative work. And so it was just magical, the fact that we managed to fit in finishing that album. And Jens Karas comes in, and that, like I mentioned, the drums had needed to be revisited. I was new to LA, did not know a lot of people. But Steve and Jens are very good friends and musicians and collaborators, because they were in The Acid together. Jens was hired on as a touring drummer with them. And so Steve's like, hey, if we need a guy, I got a guy. Like, you can't get better than Jens, and he's a phenomenal drummer. And then he remotely laid down tracks for five of the songs on the album. He had a great interpretation of everything I shared, and one take essentially laid down those five. And then my dear friend Lisa Schoenberg, I met her through learning the drums off of her years back when I moved to Portland. And then we just became really good friends, and I stopped getting lessons from her. But that's how we met. She's on Ho Hum, which is the intro track to the album. Mm-hmm. And very primal, very much knew what I was looking for, and she nailed it. And those were able to translate. And then another friend, Tucker Drez, is on Limelight still. And he definitely helped build some of the nuts and bolts for the drum approach for the songs that Jens took over.
Okay, so what was your first concert?
Oh my gosh. So I always have to answer it with two, and I'm sorry, because my memory escapes me, but it's the two that toggled. It was within months of each other. Aerosmith, Get a Grip, and Billy Joel, River of Dreams.
Oh.
I mean, if we're talking big concerts,
yes.
My first arena experience or like super well-known musician, it was within months of one another, I went to those shows.
Wow.
And I felt like a big girl.
I should think so. Aerosmith at one end of the spectrum, uh-huh. and Billy Joel
right?
quite considerably at another end of that spectrum.
So let me say, my sister was old enough, she took me to see Aerosmith. And my mom and I went to River of Dreams, Billy Joel. The spectrum of what I love musically, or what had influenced me and that I listened to, is enormous, like most of us.
Sometimes when I'm in an elevator, and British people call them lifts,
yes.
so it's not quite the same, I will have a nice little Aerosmith hum to myself.
Yes, I love it.
So, one of the songs on it, again, your third album, out on May 29th, Drone. Oh, gosh, I really, really enjoyed that. There was a meatiness to it that I really liked.
I'm going to say it. Rocks, dude. Yeah. I'm proud of it, like the energy behind it and the meaning behind it. It probably started with the coming together of that guitar sound with when drone as a concept of a song, the pairing made a lot of sense.
Because you've lived in these different places,
yeah,
what would you say your favorite record store is or was?
Well, just because it would be this one. Can I give you a reference? I don't remember the name and I regret it, but I don't know that it even exists, so they wouldn't be insulted. Okay. Nor does anyone know who I am yet at this point. But I'll tell you what I found in that record store.
Okay.
And it was in general Lower Manhattan, Lower East Side area. I found the album Chick Chick Chick, one of their albums.
Uh-huh.
And come to find out later, meeting Lisa Schoenberg, that like she collaborated with one of the drummers of Chick 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 Chick. That was probably my more memorable as going into the big city, living in New York.
It's the experience of finding something,
right,
that was the key. So
yeah.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Violet Trooper. Kissin, tell me about the name Violet Trooper.
Violet Trooper, it's come to mean this dichotomy as well of violet being crown chakra, ethereal, spiritual, feminine, regal, royal, right? And from a sonic standpoint, the vibraphone, and where my voice could go if I am high and dreamy or girly or whatever, very feminine. Then trooper is like very much mundane of this earth. You keep calm, you can carry on, masculine leaning, pragmatic. And then there's that primal quality of being of the earth, and what all it means is to catch a rhythm of being spiritual beings on earth, on planet earth. And so the name did not come intentionally out of bridging those two meanings. It did for me over time. Initially, the way that name came about was when I was living in Brooklyn with a roommate who was going to Pratt. She adopted a violet colored betta fish from a student who couldn't take it on anymore, had to like move back abroad or something. She brought it home in this tiny little plastic thing. We got it a better home. And I say, like, it's funny because I'm referring to the fish as it's a female, and we called her Violet. Come to find out, all the beautiful betta fish are male. But story goes, we both took a long weekend and had left our apartment in Brooklyn. She went to Long Island, I was in Connecticut. And we were jamming when we both got back on the Tuesday or whatever. How was your weekend? How was your... And we stare at each other at the same time, like, holy shit. We didn't take care of Violet. Violet's been on her own for 4 days. And we both run to her bowl. And she's still alive and kicking, Violet is still alive and kicking. And we're like, Violet, you're such a trooper. And it was right when I was writing songs that was for The Good Fight. And I was like, I literally said to her that very moment, like, we were relieved she was alive. And she's like, is that going to be your band name? Because she was very supportive of me writing in, the room next to her, this new album. And that, I drew that betta fish, which became on the cover of The Good Fight. It was after Violet.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mentioned about Little Giant, and that it struck me as having such a weight to it, almost like a title music of a TV show or, an intense drama. Is that something you would consider as, as licensing seems like a real gateway for some artists?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how, how easy or hard that is. But it seemed, I find myself, and I don't watch a lot of television, but I find myself Shazamming a lot more when I'm watching shows.
It's a lot of how I feel people learn about new music, for sure. I mean, the musical directors who are responsible for placing are, more and more just like in the know and very good at what they do.
Mm.
And lesser known bands are getting these opportunities to be brought up through that platform. Mm-hmm. So by all means, of course, I would be interested in that opportunity. What I have been reminded of late as I'm releasing this album is just how many hats you have to wear, right? In order to try to spread yourself through this landscape of what it means to be a musician and seize opportunities like licensing. Mm-hmm. I do think it would place well. I definitely never have written for it. Mm-hmm. I think it's just what I write ends up being, I get that feedback. I think it's just that when I just always think of an expansiveness and a moodiness.
Little giant.
Played a show at Turn, and you've got upcoming shows at Bunk Bar on August 8th and the Soundscape Northwest Festival, if it gets the go-ahead, in early September. And you're going to be playing with a rotating cast of musicians, I believe.
Yeah, most likely over time, that very well could be the case where there is a rotating cast. I feel entirely blessed, though, that Turn was and Bunk and also Soundscape Northwest definitely slated with the current group we have, which is Caroline Jackson. She's playing bass and she's doing backing vocals and some extra little tricks during the set. And Dylan Ewing, who is drumming, and he also has been entirely pivotal in getting the live set ready. He's supported with, we're using some Ableton backing tracks and he got that structured out for us. And just to, you know, I just feel very grateful and honored. They're both very talented musicians. And given new back to the performing world after several years and to Portland after several years, I couldn't have dreamed up a more compassionate and patient and fun and kind and talented two people to be part of this onset for us here in Portland. And I hope to, you know, have them with as long as possible, but I trust that the right unfolding will take place over time.
That's great. And so to segue from those music venues, what's your favorite music venue?
Mississippi, for me, just from an aesthetic standpoint, it's the same way Revival is just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Just the way they just, visuals do matter to me. It's like the warmth of the venue that in the stage and the drum heads up front, up top, mm-hmm. and that, you know, very like stoic image of the guy in armor, you know. And I guess if I were to choose, you know, I loved the Schnitz. And then New York, though, I'd have to say hands down is Beacon Theater. I saw PJ Harvey multiple times there. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun. On It was came out on May 29th. As I said, Violet Trooper is going to be at Bunk Bar on August 8th. And hopefully, if Soundscape Northwest Festival gets the go-ahead in early September. Yes. And so I advocate for everyone to go and check out Violet Trooper, the latest album, On It. Thank you so much for letting me into your home. It seems that I'm leaving with your dogs. They now have fallen quite in love with me. And my dog will be very mad.
I'm sorry. I know your dog is going to definitely notice you've been spending time with others. But thank you. Honestly, I mean, I'm completely honored to have you interview me for this. It's been such a journey, and to feel sit just on the sofa together and you right. come to my home, it's just such a pleasure, and I'm very grateful. You're an incredible woman and personality and interviewer, and I'm really glad to have this experience.
My response to that is, more please, can I have it in writing? I could do with a testimonial on LinkedIn.
All of the above. I will continue to sing your praises and want to talk with you, and I will write any and all testimonials.
I know we'd say, don't know where we'd gone until it breaks. We'd say. take on me a record.